from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the president proposes a path toward peace between Israel and Palestinians. California churches get some much-needed relief from the White House, and how a student's courageous stand for Christ got her a one-way ticket to the office, the Oval Office. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative Christian husband and homeschool dad. On Tuesday of this week, President Trump laid out his vision for peace and prosperity between Israel and the Palestinian people. And while his plan won't be lauded by everyone, it has workable compromises for both sides. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about it is the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News, Chris Mitchell.
Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, great to be with you again.
Hey, thanks so much for staying up late over there in Israel to join us. But let me ask you first, right out of the chute, how is this being received there in Jerusalem?
Well, you can imagine that there are mixed reviews. I think people on the right, they feel on the one hand, they're very excited about annexation of the Jordan Valley, which is would secure Israel's eastern border, also about the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. But they're not very happy about the Palestinian state. For example, I'll give you one reaction from the International Christian Embassy of Jerusalem. They really laud President Trump for these efforts for peace and also what he's done with Jerusalem, et cetera. But they're warning about dividing the land. I think from a biblical point of view, they just don't want to divide what they believe is the land given to the Jewish people and then giving it perhaps to a corrupt organization like the Palestinian Authority. And we'll see more reaction as the days goes on. But that's just a, sort of a thumbnail, Tony, of some of the reactions here.
Now, to that issue, in fact, I asked that question because that has long been the issue. Anytime you hear the word peace plan, it has usually been accompanied by giving up land or sovereignty. And Israel, this conversation began asking Israel, what would a peace plan look like to you? They're the ones that established the boundaries. And from a military standpoint, a security standpoint, they have the whole country, all the way to the Jordan. Their east is covered. Eastern border is covered. What this would allow for, if all of the conditions are met, there would be within Israel a sovereign a Palestinian state with certain limitations.
That's right. And I was, as I was listening to President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu, I had the sense that they were appealing to the Palestinian people and the Palestinian leadership. If you change your mind, if you change your heart, and if you take these steps to recognize Israel as a Jewish nation, if you will stop this pay to slay, you're actually rewarding terrorists who are convicted of murder or attacks against Israelis. If you do those sorts of things, then, you know, and if you renounce terror, then it would be a different entity than it is right now with the Palestinian Authority allied at times with groups like Hamas or Islamic Jihad. So there is a lot to like, and that four-year rollout really could be critical, I think, to people accepting this plan.
Now, one thing that was made very, very clear here was the president talking about security of Israel. Play clip number three.
We will not allow a return to the days of bloodshed, bus bombings, nightclub attacks, and relentless terror. Won't be allowed. Peace requires compromise, but we will never ask Israel to compromise its security. Can't do that. As everyone knows, I have done a lot for Israel, moving the United States Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing the Golan Heights, and frankly, perhaps most importantly, getting out of the terrible Iran nuclear deal.
So, Chris Mitchell, how much capital has President Donald Trump built with the Israeli people to propose something like this?
Quite a bit, Tony, because first of all, 2017, December, he recognizes Jerusalem as Israel's undivided capital. He reinforced that today, then Several months later, May 14th, 2018, he moves the U.S. Embassy. Further than that, he's recognized sovereignty of the Golan Heights. So he has a large amount of political capital with the Israeli people who if he wanted to run for president here, I think he'd do quite well with the approval ratings. And he made an important point, Tony, and you played it there in the clip, living through those days of bus bombings and terror attacks, because Israel was asked to make compromises for peace, which endangered their own security. Back in the Second Intifada that began in 2000, I lived through those days for several years, and I don't think Israelis want to go back there at all. And I think they're reassured that he would make sure that Israel's security is assured in this peace plan.
Well, a part of the conditions is disarmament and Hamas basically going away. I mean, we're going to see the terror groups being disarmed and put an end to that. So I think the hurdle is pretty high to get the Palestinians to actually come along with this plan, although there is $50 billion in economic development waiting, mostly coming from the Gulf states that will be invested in that region. What are we hearing, Chris, from the Palestinian Authority on this plan?
Well, they rejected it outright. And even before it was announced, they rejected it. In fact, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas invited Hamas leader Haniyeh to join him and thwarting this plan. So that's how they've reacted. Right now, I think there's demonstrations in Ramallah. But on the other hand, Tony, I have been hearing that some of the Palestinian people are not necessarily going to go along with this resistance against the plan. For example, I've heard that some of the merchants in Ramallah are refusing to go on a general strike. Some of the parents are refusing to have their children go out into the streets. We'll see what happens in the next several days, but the reaction might not be as great as many people think. Just like when the U.S. Embassy was moved, some people were warning of World War III. The reaction was anything but that. And let me just add one thing, Tony, about the Palestinian Authority. You know, part of the objections that they have is really what they have been feeding and indoctrinating the Palestinian people. Let me just read you a couple of quotes from Abu Rumi. He's one of the sheikhs of the Palestinian Authority. He says there's no global corruption that they are not behind, the Jewish people. And some of these quotes sound like Nazi Germany. Sheikh Osama says humanity will never be able to live together with them. And I think this is part of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict that people don't recognize sometimes, is this incitement, indoctrination to a generation of Palestinians. And I would say even that many Palestinians on the street may be hearing about this $50 billion and say, this is something I'd like, but I think right now their leadership is not going to get them close to that $50 billion.
Chris Mitchell, thanks so much for staying up late there in Jerusalem and joining us with the reaction from Israel.
Great to be with you, Tony.
You can find out more about our efforts to defend faith, family, and freedom in Washington, D.C. and around the country when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to support our ongoing efforts with a gift when you visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's TonyPerkins.com.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As you can imagine, the president's proposed peace plan has caught the eye of many on Capitol Hill, and one of those who likes the direction the president is headed is Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida. He joined Tony Perkins on Tuesday with his thoughts.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. Look forward to it.
So, Congressman, your first reaction to the proposal laid out earlier today by the president?
You know, I thought it was monumental. You know, you talk about a bold vision of laying out what I'm reading is a workable, realistic roadmap. This would be, you know, like I said, it's going to be historic and monumental if they follow through with this. And both sides have so much to gain on this. You know, we can go back to the Old Testament times, and we've seen this fighting for thousands of years, and it has to come to an end. And I think the vision that they've laid out is really good here. I'm excited about it.
I am too. I'm actually, I went in a skeptic. I've been having conversations through the weekend. But after listening to the president, listening to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and then sitting down with Ambassador Friedman and going through the details, I do think this is a bold initiative. The president has capital, as we were talking about with Chris Mitchell, with supporters of Israel, has built trust. And I do think if anyone could pave a way forward and have a managed peace, I don't think you're ever going to bring real peace there, but I think you could have a managed peace, this could be it.
Yeah, and you know, I've been over there, and we've talked to the Palestinians, we've talked to the Jewish people, and a lot of times they're working hand, you know, just next to each other, and they get along great. But it's, you know, when you get into government policies, that's when it starts to divide people. And I know a lot of these people are probably thinking, why is there such a hatred? Why are we still fighting after all these years? But for President Trump to secure agreements, both from Prime Minister Netanyahu and the opposition leader, you know, the Lieutenant General Gantz, that's huge to be able to bring those two together. That'd be like bringing Miss Pelosi together with our side, with Kevin McCarthy, and working together jointly on a project that's going to move everything forward for the nation. And for the first round, I'm excited about this, and we wish the best of a solution for this, for sure.
The Prime Minister, again, really extolling the remarkable gains that have been made by this administration, showing themselves to be the best friend of Israel ever to be in the White House.
It really is. And then, you know, Tony, when you get looking and reading in this, this is the first time this vision aims to achieve a mutual recognition of the state of Israel as a nation state of the Jewish people and the future state of Palestinian as a nation state of the Palestinian people. We've never gotten this far in this kind of a language that they are looking to have both states recognize and the ability to exist as a free Palestinian state and a free Jewish state. And if we can get over, you know, the historical conflicts that they've had, and this is going to take bold leadership, but if they look to the future and don't get hung up on the past as so many times they have, this will bring peace to that area, and with peace will come untold prosperity.
I was talking about this with Chris Mitchell about how the leadership in the Middle East, you know, Palestinian Authority, what we've seen in Iran, Iraq, is that there is a disconnect between the people. Could we be at a point where this enticement of economic development, when you see the poverty that is in the Palestinian areas, could we see a breakthrough where the people throw off the repressive, corrupt government of the Palestinians?
You know, that would be the hopes, and that's something the people have to decide. I know the mistakes we've made in the past, whether it's Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, without understanding the culture, you know, you get in there and you try to dictate this is how democracy works and things like that. But if you start from the bottom up, what do you want? What kind of country do you want? And they're doubling the size of the Palestinian state is what I've read so far. I think they're on the right path, and it's going to be, obviously, it's going to be a tiered system, and we're going to have to take it step by step and just look at the progression. But when you're looking at the amount of investment, a massive $50 billion peace, prosperity, economic plan, I mean, that's huge that everybody's going to win from.
Right. And by the way, again, most of that money coming from the Gulf region. That's not U.S. dollars. That's others investing.
That really is pretty impressive.
It is. It is. That's negotiation skills of this administration. Ted Yoho, thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, we'll be keeping our eye on this as it unfolds.
Hey, thank you.
You can find out more about Congressman Yoho when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program with a one-time gift or by becoming a stand member. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's TonyPerkins.com.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Last weekend in our special March for Life edition of Washington Watch, we talked about the move by the Department of Health and Human Services to punish the state of California for their decision to force churches to offer abortion services in their health care plans. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins with his firsthand perspective is Pastor Jack Hibbs from Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, which is in Southern California.
Jack, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, thank you for having me back. And in fact, you know, you and I are talking a lot more frequently now that California seems to be on the front line of the battlefield. So it's good to hear from you again.
Well, you went to the legislature, testified before the legislature. There was lawsuits taken against the state of California. You stood up and said, Not on my watch. You're not going to force us to fund abortion in our health care. In your case, until you get this remedied, you gave up, your church gave up their health care coverage for their employees.
Well, that's exactly correct. In fact, when that notice came to us from our health care provider, which, Tony, really what they did was our health care provider here out west just simply copied to us the note, the letter, the mandate that was given to them by the Attorney General's Office of the State of California, in agreement with Governor Jerry Brown at the time, that California churches would have to fund for elective abortions, and that the California court system viewed the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, the famous Hobby Lobby case, as being unconstitutional, and that California would have to pay California churches. We immediately contacted mutual friends of ours, Tony, at ADF, and said, listen, I'm not going to do this. And in that battle, 80 of our employees, including myself, lost our health care coverage because we could not take or receive offerings from the church family on Sunday and turn right around and designate portions of that gift to God to turn around and slaughtering babies. And so we stood firm on that. And it's been some 6 years now, Tony. And it was, I tell you, to hear what President Trump did and said on Friday just validated the fact that we not only stood our biblical convictions, but the Lord is using this particular administration to validate our position. And who's to say? Maybe it's going to cause a great effect for the unborn, and to liberate a lot of nonprofit 501c3s here in California and beyond.
So, Pastor Jack, have you heard from other pastors? I mean, those that are, you know, often hold the position that policy doesn't matter, don't get involved in these type of things. I mean, this is a very real and present threat. I mean, where you either had to make the choice of, as you said, allowing God's money to go to the slaughtering of the innocent or taking a stand, losing your health care. But now you have the Trump administration fighting on your behalf.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony, let me answer this lovingly and carefully without judgment. Number one, no. I heard from no other pastor. However, number two, 6 years later, I am meeting many, many pastors and leaders of ministries that are quite frankly, coming and saying, you know, I was on the wrong side of this when it came down.
Jack, you and your team were on the right side. What do we do now? Tell us what to do. I was asked, Tony, this last Saturday by a very prominent pastor in Southern California. He said, would you please address the pastors of California on what to do next? Tony, that is something that we, you know, we have been praying for this kind of response for decades. And I've been saying this for a while. California is turning around. We've got some tremendous momentum that is starting to rise. We've got Democrats changing party affiliations to Republicans. That's happening on our church campus. And we're seeing that up and down the state of California, as I travel up and down the state of California. Last week I was testifying before the state Senate on another issue. And people are angry in a righteous way. People love this state too much to leave, and now they're fighting back. I'm excited. Probably most importantly, Tony, righteousness. We're seeing people wake up to righteousness.
Yeah. Well, Pastor Jack, I want to thank you for your example of leadership and courage, and I do believe that as a result of taking that stand, now more people are beginning to see the truth, and from a maybe an unlikely source, we're seeing the Trump administration potentially turning California and other states by standing strong on these value issues such as the sanctity of life and religious freedom. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Jack Hibbs as well as our outreach to pastors called Watchmen on the Wall when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Last week, at a ceremony in the Oval Office, the president issued new guidance regarding a student's right to pray at school. Joining Tony Perkins to discuss her attendance at the event is Kentucky high school student Emily Cheney.
Emily, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Let me ask you a quick question. I want to make sure our listeners are completely understand here what was going on. A prayer locker. This was a place where other students could just drop off prayer requests, and then students would pray for and others would pray for those requests. Is that an accurate description?
Yes.
So what prompted you to put up a prayer locker there at your school?
We all know that life is hard, and it's not something that any of us wants to do alone. And I really feel like God called me to put up this prayer locker. And, you know, even if it helped one person, we're so thankful that God gave this blessing to us. It was just a great thing for our school, and I'm so thankful.
Your school received a letter basically saying mm-hmm. you can't do this. And so how did the school react?
My classmates were, obviously I was heartbroken, and they were sad too because they said that they even saw kids using the prayer locker, and I got like 9 to 10 prayer requests today, so I know that it was helping some people, and I was just so sad that I couldn't do this anymore, but we all prayed for a way to keep the prayers going, and it was just a great way to let students know that someone was there for them and someone cared and loved them.
So, as I understand, and I'm reading this through the press report, so if I get any of the facts wrong, please correct me, because the press doesn't always get it right. But I think you took this maybe to your youth minister, somebody at your church, and they kind of helped. And what eventually happened, this spread to other schools, and more students actually turned their lockers into prayer lockers. Is that accurate?
Yes, a local pastor started a Pray Anyway campaign, and this gathered the community, the churches, and the schools to have this Pray Anyway campaign, it was just a great way to keep the prairie walkers going. And we gave out little magnets to put on the walkers that said "Pray Anyway" or "My Walker is a Prairie Walker." It was just amazing, and like all the students put them on all the walkers. It was great.
So what started in with one locker in one school, because of the opposition, actually exploded into a multitude of schools and a multitude of lockers. So the prayer effort actually expanded.
Yes, it's just amazing. It's just truly a blessing from God, and I'm just so thankful that I was able to take part of it.
So Emily, tell me what it was like. I've been in the Oval Office, pretty intimidating, especially the first time, but to know that you went from being opposed by this big Washington firm, the Americans United for Separation Church and State, that took away the right of the students to pray. Next thing you know, you take your stand and you're standing next to the President of the United States. What was that like?
I never would have thought that it would have got me to the Oval Office, but I'm so, so thankful for this amazing opportunity that I got. And it still doesn't even seem real. I mean, it's just amazing. It's truly just a blessing from God and an incredible experience, and I'm just so thankful for it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can remember when I was a sophomore in high school, I can't imagine being called to the Oval Office. I can be called to the principal's office, not the Oval Office. How have your fellow students responded to all this attention that has focused there on Kentucky and this prayer effort?
They've been so supportive, truly. They've been so supported. The students and the teachers, everyone has been so supportive and encouraging to me, and they're all just so proud of me. And yeah, I'm just so thankful.
Well, Emily, let me add to that. I am proud of you for being bold in your faith, being courageous, and standing up for your faith and the faith of others. And God bless that effort. So, Emily, thank you for being an example to students all across this country.
Thank you so much. Thank you. No one should ever feel like they have to hide their faith. God has a plan for everyone, and you should never, ever feel like you have to hide your faith. This is something that you should be proud of. You should always let your light shine for God.
Amen. Emily Chaney, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.